This is 9/11 Free Fall.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of 9/11 Free Fall. My name is Andy Steele, and I am the host. Tonight, we'll be joined by musician Rob Luke. He's an AE 9/11 Truth supporter, and he's got a song called SOS 9/11. He'll be talking about that, and I'll be playing that song during the interview. That's all coming your way in just a moment.
He's in the lobby and the third explosion, the whole lobby collapsed on us.
Was that a secondary explosion?
Yes, it was.
Floor by floor, it started popping out.
It was like, as if they had detonated.
Detonated.
They were planned to take down a building. Boom, 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 boom.
We have explosive demolition at not only the Twin Towers, but also Building 7.
For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
You want to call your mother or something?
It's just a matter of time. That's all it is. It's a matter of time and the persistence of those who continue to adhere to it and push for it. And that's what we're doing.
Tune in to 9/11 Free Fall, a show about 9/11 truth, 9/11 science, and the activists and scholars who are blowing the lid off the crime of the century. You can download episodes at 911freefall.com.
The views expressed on this show by guests and the hosts on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 truth.
Rob Luke is a musician. He's also a U.S. Army veteran, serving 3 years as a communications specialist. He's also served as a volunteer for 2 years in Norway with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We're going to be learning more about him today and his music. Rob, welcome to 9/11 Free Fall.
Thank you, Andy. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, tell me more about yourself. I love doing these shows where I have some kind of artist on the program. It's a welcome break from talking about all of the science and stuff that we normally talk about here on the show, which is very important, super important, because that is the basis by which we make our case. But I love seeing people take that extra step. Even if they have a science background, they understand it, and they incorporate it into some kind of artwork, whether it be a painted picture or mural or a play, or music. Gives us a chance to talk about those things on top of what we normally talk about. So tell us more about yourself. Step back from that brief bio I just read, and begin by telling me, what made you want to be a musician in the first place?
Well, I have to tell you the truth now. I'm just a living room musician, you know, or a bedroom musician. I pretty much just, you know, play for myself, but I do, you know, occasionally play for friends, other people. I play the guitar, a little piano, but on a daily basis, it's kind of funny. I do, as far as my work, I'm a registered nurse, and I have a master's degree in health, and my thesis was on how to help people with dementia to, you know, it's a terrible disease, and it can be really debilitating. And to try to help them have a good moment, a good day, a good hour, and believe it or not, music is so important there because, you know, the medicine really doesn't help, and it's a gradually, you know, they lose their memories more and more and more until they pass away basically, and they even forget about who they are. Some people can't even look in a mirror. But a lot of these people, and of course it begins all the way from the start of the disease, maybe 10 years down the road, but music is something that they seem to remember. And our brains seem to be able to, for some reason, music is so a part of us, for those who love music. And so on a daily basis, I actually take out my guitar, and, you know, being a registered nurse, we have busy days, but there's usually an hour or half hour, you know, where there's a quiet moment, and I take the guitar out, and we sing, and I play the songs, and sing the songs they love, the old songs, and it might be on an individual basis or on a group basis to sing together. And there's always maybe one that doesn't like it, but pretty much most of the other ones appreciate it, and they close their eyes and they smile, and they're just, you know, back in that day. That song was from 19, you know, whatever it was, they sang it, 30s, 40s, 50s, and they feel they're young again, and they just get real happy. So that's how I basically use music in everyday life. But otherwise, I do write songs, and I write songs because things happen. You know, every day, you know, Andy, things happen. But if something really moves me, then I just like, kind of comes out in a poem form. It's a gift. I'm thankful for it. And music at the same time, I'm able to put some music to it. Music kind of comes at the same time. So then I write a little song. So, you know, I wouldn't say I'm not a professional musician anyway, and I'm not a good musician, but I've always loved music, and I love to, to both share what I can with others, and then I think it's like my favorite fan. I like to, if I sit down and play my guitar, I play my own stuff, so it's, I kind of have an ego that way, but I do love music.
I like what you say about being a bedroom musician or living room musician. I have an ulterior motive. Obviously, I want to talk about 9/11 and the evidence, but I also want to put it in the audience's mind, and maybe this will spread somehow virally, this attitude throughout America and the rest of the world, is that people need to start forming their own establishment when it comes to entertainment. I'm so embarrassed when I see these shows where people go and grovel to a panel of judges or executives looking for validation from people who don't always even put the art at the forefront of their decision-making. There might be some ulterior motive involved in promoting a certain person over another person. We need to see an end to that, because I think it's screwing up our entire culture here. I want to see people doing what makes them passionate and doing it, even if it's not their main job. I mean, if you want to write a novel, go out and write a novel, and maybe that's the only one you ever write, but you contributed that to the world. And a lot of times the independent stuff is so much more interesting to read and watch and listen to. I mean, I'm kind of a living room artist in my spare time, taking that up in the past couple of years. And just, I think it's good for the individual. I think it'd be good for the society if we can all start sharing this stuff with each other. And music is so important. I mean, just look at the importance they put on music and soundtracks and movies. They'll have these YouTube videos. It'll be called Inappropriate Soundtracks, and they'll take a scene from a movie and put in completely different music. So if it's a scary movie, they'll put in some wacky sounding music, and it makes it funny. It influences the whole scene to the point now where you can't watch the scene without imagining the funny version of it. It just totally ruins it. But that shows you how important it is. And as we all know, sounds have an effect on the human psyche. Even the hertz level that it gets played at can affect people's moods and stuff. So music is so important. And you're absolutely right. You hear a song, you'll remember where you were the first time that you heard it. So we definitely need more people out there creating new original music, creating good music, in my opinion.
I hope some of it's good.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe this is just getting old or something, but nobody ever likes the music of the next generation, so maybe I'm a victim of that, but to me it just sounds like a bunch of noise now. I don't even listen to the radio anymore. So who were some of the musical artists that inspired you and who you try to capture the spirit of in your work?
Well, that's interesting you say that, because, you know, I hadn't thought about that ahead of time, but of course, you know, growing up, I grew up in Southern California, and so some of the people that I, you know, really looked at early, you know, I loved the Eagles, and I, of course, you can't be young without loving the Beatles, at least some of the music, and But the Eagles, I like kind of more that kind of sound and style. There was a group called America I used to like. As far as individuals, you know, I can't really put any saying individuals that I really tried to, you know, like learn so much from them. Of course, there's some fantastic, you know, Bruce Springsteen's fantastic, and there's a lot of other great, great individuals. And of course, my mother would say Elvis Presley, and I've heard of course some Elvis Presley, but that was before my generation, actually. But I mean, these people are fantastic, what they can do. But the more I listen to songs, I remember that I had a kind of a special experience when I was about 20, I'm not sure exactly, I was probably a little bit more, 22 or 3, but when I heard a song that I had, it was by Supertramp, it was Breakfast in America, and the song was Take the Long Road Home, and what I was going to say was, growing up as a teenager, we used to bop around that music, it was Take the Long Way Home, it was a cool song, but as I listened to that night, and listen to the words, I realized the guy was telling a heartbreaking story about how his girlfriend really wasn't interested anymore. So after the concert, he'd take the long way home. And I just realized, my gosh. And it was right then I just started realizing how songs like Yesterday, All My Troubles Seem So Far Away, these people writing a lot of these songs were experiencing really terrible, painful experiences. And what happened? They become number one hits. They were those are some of the songs we love the most. Are actually from a tragedy, you know, and so it's interesting how that understanding of music has kind of developed over the years. That music is so much more than just the beat, and so much more than just a happy, fun melody. And some, like you say, about the movies you're talking about, that if you put a kind of a another type of a melody, it becomes totally different. And songs, a lot of times the songs we love, the words can be really, in a way, sad. And you know, just tragic, but the melody can be beautiful. So we sing and we bop and we love the song, and sometimes we don't even realize the pain behind the message. And so anyway, it's funny how, you know, how music has such a strong hold on us. But I love music anyway. Yes, but artists, I just, you know, of course I love all the big artists. But right now my brain doesn't tell me too much who I should point out. Three Dog Night, I remember, and some other. Who was your favorite artist when you were growing up, Andy? Did you have any favorites?
I always liked the Beatles, and you know, I can like just about anything if it's good. I tend to like a lot of strange music, kind of like that. I'm a big David Lynch fan. When he has his movies, he'll always feature these artists that are really good, but it always has like this haunting quality to the music, and it fits into the story real well, and that's what I really like. And you talk about people will hear a beat and then hear the words and find out what the song is really about. What's funny to me is how people will have a completely different interpretation of the song without paying attention to the words, but when you actually pay attention to the words of the song, it'll be about something completely different, like that Sting song, Every Move You Make, I'll Be Watching You. I mean, people would play that at weddings like it was some kind of romantic song, but it's actually about a stalker, you know? You can have a good night of internet research by just looking into songs, and there'll be articles. What the song really means is that, and you'll be like, oh my God, that's creepy.
Yeah, totally different what you thought. And that's a special example, because I heard that he wrote that, you know, in 5 minutes, like on the toilet paper roll, and after his wife had left him, and he was so upset about it, and the other guys didn't even want to do it because they like knew him and knew his wife, and the guys in the police, they didn't want to do that song, but he, you know, talked him into it, and they did it. And of course, it's like you say, it's a classic that'll never go away. It's such a fantastic song, but it has as its root just a, you know, tragic story.
Exactly. September 11th. That was a tragedy, and should be inspiring a lot of music out there. It did inspire some music. A lot of it was used as propaganda to get us ginned up into war. But where were you on the day of September 11th? How did you hear about the event?
You know, your listeners don't know that, but I've actually lived in Norway for about 35 years. And so I was in Norway, of course, at the time, and I remember I was outside working in our garden, and a neighbor drove by, and he told me, that he just heard on the radio that the first tower had been hit. And of course, we weren't expecting any more than that, but I thought, oh my gosh. So I got in his car, we drove home to his house, he had a nice big TV, we put it on, we were sitting there watching it. And so you know, that's what I remember. It was a beautiful day, and we were outside, and then, my gosh, what it turned into, a nightmare. So
yeah, it seemed like it was a beautiful day everywhere, even where I was. I remember, though, we had a hurricane later on in the week. I was in Florida, and nobody seemed to care about the hurricane that was coming anymore. And it came, and we were just inside the living room watching television as the rain was beating against the windows. And like the previous hurricane I had been through, it was all this big panic and, oh, if you need to evacuate, go to these places. And I didn't hear anything like that because everyone was so focused on what happened in New York. So it just shows the context of certain events and what they are competing against for public attention.
That's exactly what happened to all of us. We were so hypnotized by it. I don't know what the word is, but that's why we didn't really pay attention to the details. We were just so, you know, we couldn't think anything other than what we were told at the time, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I watched World Trade Center 7 come down on television that day. My friend ran out for a second, went out the front door for a second to do something, came back in, said, "What just happened?" I said, "Oh, they brought down the building to control the fire or something." And then I didn't think about it again for 6 years. I mean, logic should tell me you can't bring down a building in a day with any technology that I know of.
We didn't think about that. It was just so awe. What's the word? You know, shock and awe. It was shock and awe. Right? And we were shocked and awed. And we, like you say, you can't bring down a building in 2 seconds. You're ever going to bring down the building in one day, just hear it's gone down. And like, in a way, it came down. Totally perfect demolition by its own footprint. So it's just amazing.
You wouldn't know it now, but back then I was like, yeah, they just brought down the building, no big whoop. Who did it? Let's go get them.
No, we didn't think anything about it. Not anything about it.
So how did you start thinking about it? What woke you up to the controlled demolition evidence?
Well, the thing was, you know, I was totally, I had no idea. I didn't think about it, of course. And I had a friend in Norway who was also an American who was very interested in a lot of things on the Internet and was not happy about a lot of things going on in the States at the time. And he was sending me all kinds of stuff, you know, links and videos and stuff on my Facebook. So I pretty much just ignored it because he was a friend, but I just didn't bother looking at the stuff. And then one day, several times, he sent me something about Stephen Jones. And, of course, the name Stephen Jones didn't mean anything to me. But Then he pointed out, this guy's a BYU professor. And the reason that caught my attention is because, you know, BYU is actually owned and run by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That's the one thing. And a couple other things. I've been to this school several times it's a big university in Provo, Utah. But it's a fantastic school, and I've been there several times visiting, and I've been to a couple different short-term courses there. The one was a Norwegian course I took for 8 weeks on a little language training center, which is adjacent to BYU, and where I learned Norwegian the first time I was going to come here. So when I saw that, you know, that it was a guy, he was sending me, you know, links from a guy from BYU, then it kind of caught my attention. Wow, what is this? You know, that kind of was something close to home to me. So I went in and watched the first video, one of the ones that Stephen Jones sent. And if you listeners, of course, most of them know that Stephen Jones is a former physics professor, so he understands the physics of things and how they are both built and how they come down. And when he was sent a video about the Building 7, World Trade Center 7 coming down, he looked at it and thought, that looks strange. Just like you say now, when we now look at it, we say, oh my gosh, that can't have just fallen down like that because of some office fires. But at the time, we, of course, were totally shocked and awe. We didn't see it all. But so anyway, I started watching Stephen Jones's commentaries and following his story because it was amazing. Here, the guy was teaching 21 years at BYU, a very well-liked teacher, and now he had become, in a way, a problem for the school because, of course, I'm sure the school is getting a lot of negative flack because here's a professor saying anything that was not in harmony with the official narrative. And so, you know, eventually he was put on administrative leave, and he eventually just decided to retire early so he could do his own research further. But it was a terrible blow for him, and it was very... Anyway, his whole story caught my heart and my attention, and that's how I got involved and interested in the whole thing. And of course, the more I watched, the more I, you know, could see that and understood that this was... definitely an inside job, you know, with the help of these guys, whoever, we don't know, of course, how the planes were flown or whatever, but it was a combination of things that happened, of course, that brought these things down. So it was Stephen Jones and my friend John Cregan that opened my eyes to this.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. A day after September 11th, I had a friend from Taiwan forward me an email that had been forwarded a whole bunch of times, and it was from her American teacher saying that these buildings were brought down with explosives. There's no way that they could have come down the way they did. All of this. Completely ignored it. I just said, wow, this stuff is starting quick, this conspiracy stuff. And I just sort of dismissed it for years. What's funny about it is I've talked to her past couple of years, and I asked her about that email, and she forgot she even sent it to me. It's funny. I was like, no, that's like super important. I want to see who was saying this the day after September. Oh, I don't have it anymore. I saved every email that you ever sent me, Andy, except I don't have that one anymore.
Well, maybe one of your listeners will know or have gotten one of those emails. Someday you'll get it back.
I'd love to get in a time machine and shake myself that day. Pay attention. So you woke up to this, and I know for a lot of us it changes our worldview. How did it change your worldview?
Well, I got to admit that I was brought up in a family that was interested in the John Birch Society and the whole possibility that things weren't always as it seemed to be, and that there are powers that you know, we have the president, we have the prime ministers around the countries, but there are people behind these leaders, and they're not all good. And that so anyway, the whole idea, it wasn't difficult for me. I'd read a book called None Dare Call It Conspiracy for many, many years ago, and so it wasn't difficult for me to in a way grasp that there was something going on. And the crazy thing is, and I say crazy, but you know, as I tried to then share the little that I saw with close family members, with friends that I had known for many, many years. Wow, it was like I had thrown a pie in their face or thrown, you know, they just can't, you know the deal. It's just, you can't really accept things that are so total opposite of what you believe. And so it was kind of amazing to me how my own family reacted, really, some of my family members reacted really, you know, really negatively, and my friends. So it's amazing how, you know, how sometimes you see it and sometimes you don't, you know. So,
well, you're out in Norway, and I'd love to learn more about Norway. That's just a country I haven't thought about, and I would like to do some more traveling in a couple of years, maybe when I retire, and see some of these places. But in Norway, have you talked to people about this issue? What's the general attitude there, if you have?
You know, I have been active on my own Facebook page, and I've talked to a few people. I've had a lot of stuff on Facebook, which people could either ignore or look at, so I'm not sure that way, but the people that I've talked with, it's pretty much like, for the most part, you know, people have not thought about it. They're some, you know, can lend you an ear and listen a little bit, but I've actually considered now to make a presentation and get a platform. I thought about, you know, contacting the, I know you've the architects and engineers have done an amazing job in America and other places in the world. So I thought about going to the university now and, you know, putting on, you know, get an appointment and make a night and then have a presentation, perhaps from the University of Arizona, of course, and a lot of the other videos. You can make a fantastic, any one of us can make a fantastic presentation to share. So I'm planning on doing that. And I really haven't had too many serious conversations, except like with my friends, that this one guy, you know, that I told you about that was interested in it. We've talked a lot. And, but yeah, you know, for the most part, people are, not don't know about it and don't, you really think about it and it's not a theme, but I have met certain individuals that are awakened to it and see the, like my stepdad, he's from California, but he's a fireman, and he said, Jim Smalley, he said, as soon as he saw the building go down, like say one of the trade centers going down, he knew that there was, you know, that there was explosives involved there. So some people saw it right away, other people not. But Norway, you got to come to Norway, and we'll take you around and show you the sights.
Absolutely, and I'll have to fit that into my schedule at some point. Got to see Norway. I want to see the pyramids in Egypt before I die. See the Greek ruins, all of those things. So you've written a song, and originally when you contacted me, you were telling me about it. I played it. It was very good. Tell our audience about your 9/11 song.
Well, this was about, I think I've written down, January of this year. I guess I finished it, and you know it as you know as I've paid more and more attention to the work that that Richard Gage and his wonderful co-workers there, and all the, you know, the more than 3,000 architects and engineers, I've been fascinated with, you know, their work. And I can't remember exactly what triggered me to write this song, but I've done it before where, you know, there's been something happened and I've written a song about it, and it just seemed natural to me that for me as a songwriter, you know, of sorts, that I would try to write a song. And usually, Andy, when I write a song, I usually, it's, you know, it's maybe more frivolous. Things happen, and I just kind of, you know, I like to rhyme, and just the first line, second line, third line, fourth line, then I get a chorus, and it, you know, takes maybe, you know, between 5 minutes and an hour or something to write a song, and they're pretty simple songs. With this song, I started working on it, and I changed kind of the directions a couple times, because I first started writing it from my own viewpoint, how terrible it all was, and I can't remember even the words I used. But then I started thinking about the families, and of course I paid attention to the McElveens and their story, and you know, about Bobby and then the parents, and I started realizing that, you know, if I'm going to make a song that's going to be meaningful to people, I think taking the families, the victims' perspective into consideration, the first responders' situation, and all the people, all those first responders that both experienced such terrible circumstances that day and have been thereafter gotten sick and died because of the terrible toxins that they experienced. So there was many things in my mind, and like I said, I changed my directions a couple times, but I ended up in a way, like I said, thinking, trying to write a song that I thought would be meaningful and would be acceptable to the families who lost people that day and in the time afterwards. So that's kind of what I used as my theme thereafter. And so you've got it there, and I don't know if you want me to just think here. I'll just say, what else can I say about it? So I tried to make a combination of both things that were meaningful, text, and then music that I thought would, you know, go along with it. And feelings are important, so my feelings with their feelings, and as far as the music goes. And I only had a guitar. I'm not a big musician, so I have a guitar and I play a little piano, a little organ. So, you know, with my and like I say, I'm a living room guitarist, so I only know so many chords also. So I'm not a solo guitarist, so I had to kind of makeshift do with what I had. But I'm I'm pretty pleased with the results, although the copy you have, I think, well, I should have changed some of the words. It could have been that's not quite right. That, you know, but anyway, it's, you got what you got, and I'm thankful for that. And like we talked about it, you and I'm hopefully this song, if we're going to play it afterwards, that it will be something that will touch other people, other musicians, singers, musicians, but also people who do videos and pictures, and we can put together a product that we can share, you know, online and on YouTube and Facebook, and in this way share the truth of what actually happened. That something that happened, that it was an inside job. Things that happened that have not been published in the newspapers. And try to share what we know and feel, and in that way, kind of, you got the architects, engineers, and the lawyers, and all these great people out there doing, and yourself contacting millions of people. But we can maybe through music also share, you know, what we see and what we've seen and what we feel.
All right, the song is SOS 911. So we're gonna go ahead and play that now.
There's something they're not telling us, something they won't say. We're gonna find out anyhow, come what may. To heaven, all the souls who died that day. Pray for them and for the families and the guilty who must pay. Somehow, somewhere, some way. Somehow, somewhere, some way. In session, will the victims ever see real justice in reality? Only truth can make us free. Grant you peace. Somehow, someway, please. Shattered the glass. Many firemen heard, and in testimony said it went all around their heads. Towers 1 and 2, we know all about you. Still the third tower fell before the day was through. Was it caused by fires or well-placed explosions? Even controlled demolition implosion? Could barely believe each fell symmetrically at nearly free fall speed. From our TV screens, we could feel your screams as white dust faded, hopes and dreams. May your precious lives a grand jury sway, and the truth revealed, come what may. Somehow, somewhere, some way. Somehow, somewhere, some way. Somehow, somewhere, some way. Somehow, somewhere, some way.
So that's a very good song. I wanted our audience to hear it. Rob, first of all, you know, they can hear it on this show, so they can always download this show and get the song out of it. But have you made it available in any kind of format that people, if they just want to get the song without listening to me, can listen to it?
Well, I've just sent it out to people I know, basically. But what I want to do, Andy, is I've talked to a person here, and actually right now I'm visiting my mom, so I'm actually right now in California, in Southern California, and I met with a sound engineer 2 days ago, and so I'm planning to get it recorded at a little better quality and maybe a little bit enhanced in a little bit different ways, and then when that's done, I could put that out on the YouTube. And at the same time, like I say, I look at my song as the rough, raw, you know, the first step. And then if there's anybody out there that wants to collaborate with or without me, but, you know, just it would be nice to do it together. But, you know, because the internet, you can communicate all over the world and put together, you know, something that would be a product that would with both visuals and sound that people could share. Both social media and on YouTube, and we could really, you know, share something that, you know, they could both see and feel, and in a way to sadly be able to remind people of this terrible event, but that you know, there's a lot of people that lost their lives. We can't just let it go. We can't just forget about it. People who, and there's still people losing their lives, these first responders, it's terrible. And it was something that, you know, that really should be dealt with and a new investigation really, really should be. Hopefully, you know, this is going to be done with the what's it called, the grand jury that's going on, and all this information going out. It's fantastic. So hopefully, a song like this could help further the work among music interested people. And of course, a lot of people love music. So if we could make a good product, I think it would be. I think it would go far to. Share the message.
Well, there may be people out there who are interested in this particular craft, have some kind of talent to offer, and helping Rob out, maybe collaborating on future works. And I didn't talk to you about this before the show, so I don't want to put you on the spot, because I don't give out my email address, my personal one, on radio, but how can people get in touch with you? Can they email you directly, or if you want, they can just write to this show and I'll forward the message to you? But what's the best way if somebody out there wants to help you out to get in touch with you?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question, Andy. Like you say, giving out our emails on the air maybe is not the best idea, but I think that's a good idea, because the people who listen, you know, I'm sure you have a lot of people listening to your show, and among them, either they or someone they know, that also is interested in sharing the 9/11 truth message. If they hear this now and think, well, maybe, you know, my neighbor, my friend, my brother-in-law, my sister would be interested, and we could if they just write you send the station, you know, an email. And or a letter, and you can get it to me. I'll give you my information, and then we can. If anybody wants to, I'd love to. You know, work together with anybody. And you know, we're not trying to make a buck off this or anything. It's just to get together and make something that we can that's presentable. And you want to, like I say, putting something on YouTube. I want it to be, you know, a good quality, not just what I do in my living room. You know, so. So anyway, I hope that there'll be some people that would be interested, and we'll see what happens.
Right, and just to clarify, folks, right on 911freefall.com, there's a contact box. But if you want to just write a one-sentence question, I'm a sound engineer, or I'm a musician too, can you put me in touch with Rob Luke? I'll forward the message on to Rob, and he will take it from there. So it's that easy. All you got to do is go to 911freefall.com. Now, Rob, I was opining on modern music, and I feel like a lot went downhill beginning in 2000 with the boy bands and all of that. But we used to have protest artists out there in music, people who sang about political issues, real political issues, not this fake wedge issue stuff that is just trendy to take a certain position. It helps your career, so suddenly you're passionate about this particular thing that the establishment is pushing, and you can get your face out there and let everyone know how good of a person you are by virtue signaling. That's modern times. Back then, people would make art because they were really passionate, actually passionate about the war in Vietnam, things like that. I already given my opinion, so maybe I've tainted the water a little bit, but how do you feel about modern music and its relevance to real-world issues now?
Good question, Andy. I must admit that as a youth, the radio was my best friend. I listened to the radio. As soon as I come in my room, I put the radio on, and so I knew every song and every artist and every detail, and could have a good discussion on let's say the music of the time. Today, like you said you don't watch the news too much. You know, it's too negative, whatever it is, like music. So I of course hear music sometimes on the car radio or on the, you know, at my work radio or at home, you know, whatever. But like to be real into what's going on today, I must admit I'm not. But I do know, like you're saying, a lot of the music today is, you know, I mean, you can, like, of course, different generations love different type of music, but so I don't like a lot of the music today. But you know, that there are of course a few, and in the old days, like you said, you know, we had of course Bob Dylan probably started it, and who were some of the other ones? I thought of Creedence. Some of their songs were anti-war. My brother just sent me a really nice Glen Campbell tape, you know, the good old Glen Campbell. But he's got a song in there called, Texas, what was that place called? I forget. Anyway, it's a beautiful song, and it's about this guy leaving his girl and going off to war and cleaning his gun while he's thinking about his girlfriend. And it's called, I've got a blank mind now. Anyway, in the old days, they used to do that and protest. Of course, the Vietnam War was a very difficult thing. And it's funny because at the time, as a Republican at the time, I was thinking these guys were all, you know, terrible, you know, hippie commies. But now I look back and think, well, some of those guys really had an important message to share. And anyway, I do like the song that Bruce Springsteen wrote. And I forget the name of that, but it has to do with people on the border, and there's some good artists, of course, but I'm sorry to say it's not my forte to talk about the modern ones. I'm not paying attention too much lately.
No, I haven't either. And look, I remember coming home from school every day, and I would put on MTV and do my homework, and it just seemed like the artists were more interesting back then and more unique, and some of it was really silly, but it just, I don't know, it just had a better feel to it. It didn't feel like it was so structured. Sometimes they had these musical videos that would be so messed up, and I guess that I like the visual aspects of the music videos that I would focus on more. But now, I don't know, it just seems like, I don't even see music videos anymore, but it just seems so prepackaged. But there's good artists out there, though. I mean, the world didn't stop being cool. It's just the people being promoted stopped picking the cool people in recent years. How do you feel about the situation for people like yourself who may have a good song out there and they don't want to sell out, though? You know, people who want to be a musician, who like the idea of performing, but don't want to give in to everything else that comes with it, give in to being a celebrity. And the nightmare I could imagine that would come with that, you know, just what I've seen happen to other people who don't want to perform songs that don't fit with their artistic vision of how they want their performances to go. What are those people to do?
Well, I think, you know, interesting enough, you know, technology has both its good sides and bad sides. But I think, you know, it's actually possible for somebody to stay in the studio and make music and put it out on YouTube, and I'm not sure how you make money off of that, so that's another question. So I think, but getting it out is, I think, is pretty easy now through the social media, through YouTube, and if it's good, you know, people like it, of course, then it's going to go viral and it's going to be popular. Then if you want to have you're going to want to make money off it, I think you pretty much have to have your own concerts then. You have to go around and play for people that are interested in hearing you, and then that way you could get money. And maybe, I don't know if any people buy CDs anymore because, you know, pretty much everything's downloaded from the internet or stolen from the internet. And, you know, so, but as far as like getting it out or getting known, I think that's possible to do. Whereas before you had to get an agent who you're in a way dependent upon. And of course I think a lot of people, and especially in here in LA, a lot of people came from the whole country to become musicians, movie stars, singers, and they were probably badly, what's the word I'm thinking, they were not treated well. Probably people took advantage of them, and they ended up, you know, washing dishes someplace, and then maybe even worse, you know, depressed and going back home or committing suicide or whatever. So, you know, it's that kind of thing as it was before, where you were totally dependent upon having some kind of an agent, some kind of a record label. Today, you can pretty much do a lot of stuff from your home or your studio, putting it out on YouTube. And like I said, that's the one way to start without having a lot of other influences. And I was going to say also, I would love to know, and if you get any suggestions, I try to think through the internet, who has actually written a song about, you know, finding the truth, about knowing what was true about any situation. And of course, 9/11 is a big one. But I would be interested if anybody out there has some good suggestions of songs or artists where somebody was actually really, really looking for more of something that was maybe really meaningful and like that. I would love to know. So if you get any suggestions there, you can send them along to me.
Right. And actually, I haven't looked into it too deeply, but one of the platforms that the show plays on is SoundCloud. And that is filled with tons of different artists. Some of them are following this show, but they're artists who do music. And that is a great platform to be able to get your music out, collaborate with others, make friends. It's like a social network for musicians. There's other people that do podcasts as well, just like myself. But that's a great platform. It's actually easy. You can download stuff. If you don't want to let people download your music, you just want them to be able to listen to it streaming, you can set the settings so that it doesn't allow downloads. A lot of freedom there. So that's also a good platform. So I know artists have a lot to say about society, where we're going, and you can see a lot about a particular time period by listening to the music. Not just the words of it, but also just the overall tone of it, whether it's a happy tone, sad one. You can get an idea of the people at the time by listening to the music of the time. So I'm certain you have an opinion about it. In my view, I think we've been headed on a trajectory that is building up to a crescendo here with the politics so out of control and so divisive, and the media, just you can't trust them anymore. Things are coming out this week that further validates that sentiment. You just wonder, how far is this going to go? Where is it headed? Do you think it's going to last, though? Do you think things will straighten out again in civilization? People will snap back to reality and they'll start looking at the world in a more realistic way and maybe give consideration to issues like 9/11, especially with the passage of time?
You know, if you look at, if you watch television, you can become really depressed. You know, it's there's so much out there that is, you know, both divisive and negative and sad. And of course, we all know in our own, you know, in our own neighborhoods, in our own families, we all have difficulties, we all have challenges, and we see it's kind of a sign of the times, you know. Things go faster, things go crazy, and of course, the past has also been a lot of things happened in the past that have not been good, and there's been a lot of bad times in the past. But you know, as it's going now, I think about our own country, and I think about, of course, you know, America. I think about Europe and what are happening. And you know, I'm a pessimist. In another way, I'm an optimist. So it looks to me like, you know, things are like I talk about crescendo. I think we're coming to some kind of a head, and I think that it's both good and bad. You know, I'm you know, as a person of faith, I believe that there's hope. I think that in all of our lives that there's hope to make our lives better if we work on it. And I think, of course, I believe in a higher power. I believe that God can help us, and he does. At the same time, you know, if we make dumb choices, then we ruin it for ourselves. And then the people around us make dumb choices, that it can ruin our lives too, at least for a certain amount of time. But then, like you said, things do get better. If we keep trying, things get better. Now, as far as society goes, I'm one of the people that believe, you know, that that it's going to take a lot to in a way, to really change society back to normality. And I'm one of the people that believe that, you know, we're heading towards, a change. I think it's going to be a change eventually, and I think it's going to be for the better. So let's put it that way. I think we're moving towards a time when, and I'm not saying it's going to be an easy change, but I think that, I believe that there's going to be good times ahead, as long as we're trying to do the best we can and help each other, and that we can look forward to a good future. You know, if you watch television, you can become really depressed. You know, there's so much out there that is, you know, both divisive and negative and sad. And of course, we all know in our own, you know, in our own neighborhoods, in our own families, we all have difficulties, we all have challenges, and we see it's kind of a sign of the times. You know, things go faster, things go crazy, and of course, the past has also been a lot of things happened in the past that have not been good, and there's been a lot of bad times in the past. But you know, as it's going now, I think about our own country, and I think about, you know, America, I think about Europe, and what are happening. And you know, I'm a pessimist, in another way I'm an optimist. So it looks to me like, you know, things are like I talk about crescendo. I think we're coming to some kind of a head, and I think that it's for both good and bad. You know, I'm as a person of faith, I believe that there's hope. I think that in all of our lives that there's hope to make our lives better if we work on it. And I think, of course, I believe in a higher power. I believe that God can help us, and he does. At the same time, you know, if we make dumb choices, then we ruin it for ourselves. And then the people around us make dumb choices, that it can ruin our lives too, at least for a certain amount of time. But then, like you said, things do get better. If we keep trying, things get better. Now, as far as society goes, I'm one of the people that believe, you know, that that it's going to take a lot to in a way, to really change society back to normality. And I'm one of the people that believe that, you know, we're heading towards, a change. I think there's going to be a change eventually, and I think it's going to be for the better. So let's put it that way. I think we're moving towards a time when, and I'm not saying it's going to be an easy change, but I think that, I believe that there's going to be good times ahead, as long as we're trying to do the best we can and help each other, and that we can look forward to a good future.
I think that future generations are going to rebel against all of this, because that's just what young people do typically. I mean, when I grew up, there was a very, I wouldn't say anti-government attitude, but sort of anti-establishment attitude. And then it kind of went into the other direction, and the young people became more pro-establishment, because they're working on them in the schools to think that way. But I think someone's going to rebel against this, and it'll kind of swing the other way again. And these things happen throughout history. I talked a little bit about this last week. Countries go through bad times. We had a Great Depression at one point in this country. It wasn't great. It was actually terrible times. It influenced a generation. So you ended up with this whole generation of people that would stick all the soap slivers together and try to make as much of their resources as they could, even when they didn't have to. In times like the 50s and 60s, when we had more prosperity, they would still be frugal and all this. It influenced them moving forward, and then generations were different afterwards. I think the best thing you can do is just know how to cope and focus on the things that you are the most passionate about, to the individual, whatever that is. And keep a sense of history and just know that it's all happening around you. You can participate. At the end of the day, you can go back into your house and tune the world out, too, for a certain period. You don't want to tune it out completely, but you can tune it out for 5 hours or whatever time that you're awake at night.
Definitely need quiet time.
You definitely do, yes. News is so noisy and it's all this yelling, and that's all it really is. I don't think it can go on. I think that this is such an unhealthy situation for our culture that somebody's just going to snap, not in a necessarily a bad way, but just say, okay, I'm done. I'm leaving. I'm finished with this. And a new culture will sprout up. You'll have, you have Hollywood as the center of entertainment. I want to see a new center of entertainment sprout up and, I don't know, pick whatever random place, Topeka, Kansas. Maybe a group of artists settle out there. And we start having our movies made in Topeka, Kansas, and that's what people are watching in 50 years. Maybe in 100 years, that's out of control, and then 200 years, it's somewhere else. But that's what you got to do, is just adapt by changing and beginning with yourself. So something must give you hope to keep you involved in the issue, caring about it, writing songs about it. I want to hear what that is for you.
Well, you know, I grew up being taught that that there was hope, that we have unseen forces around us that care about us. I'm talking about, you know, angels, and I believe in God, and I believe in Jesus Christ, and his whole story is just fantastic. So, but I grew up hearing that, but I didn't really believe it as a kid. But as time has gone by, and I've got older and a little bit wiser, and made a lot of mistakes myself, and you know, I've just come more and more to believe that. People are basically good, and I think that, you know, even different cultures, different languages, different world settings. If you just get to know the people, that basically people want good things. They want the same things. They want to, you know, have food on the table for their children and to have a quiet, nice life. And I think that this is, you know, a natural thing that you know, God has put in all of us. And sometimes we lose track of that. Money becomes so important, or, you know, power becomes so important. And I think that's where we get off the wrong end. And just trying to do the best we can for ourselves, our family, being a decent neighbor, a decent citizen, you know. But it all comes down to the fact that I believe that you know, we're all God's children, and it's kind of a natural thing in us. We should want to, and many people do want to try to be good to each other. And I think there's hope, and I think, and I believe there's going to be a new existence, a new world someday, and it'll be much, much better for everybody who, again, who's trying and wants to do the best. And it's kind of, maybe some people might think that's kind of a fairy tale, but that's kind of something I believe in.
No, I don't believe it's a fairy tale. I think we can make a new world just by beginning with our own world. And you're awake to this issue. Put time into telling others about it, educating others, and just do what you can for this issue and do what you can for yourself. And that's how you begin to make the world a better place. And we are now out of time. So, Rob Loop, thank you for what you are doing, for your musical work and the activism that you have done talking to other people. And thank you for coming on 9/11 Free Fall today. This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele saying have a great week and good luck.